Well, in your speech, you said that 2015 was really the year that you guys can take back the RFS. Why do you think 2015 is better positioned than maybe 13 or 14?
Because there's nowhere else for it to go except the future. I mean, if the EPA doesn't get this back on track, they may as well not have a program. And it's the law. It's the law of the land. And for them to not get it back on track would be, you know, just sort of a blatant violation of that. And so, I think that they can, and that we're going to do everything that we can do to support that. They've said that's their goal, to get it back on track. We're going to do absolutely everything that we can do to support that goal.
Why is it taking so long for the EPA? Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's 2013 since the last update. Is that right?
Well, they finalized the 2013, and the final rule came out in August of 2013, the 2013 RVO.
Okay.
And so because the final rule for 2013 didn't come out until August of 2013, the proposed rule for 2014 didn't come out until November of 2013.
Okay.
And so the 2014 RVO was by far the most controversial one because of the call for the across the board cuts in the program.
That was the proposed rule into November of 2013.
Yes.
And they called for cuts.
Yes.
Okay. Why are we still talking about this, you know, a year and 5 months or whatever, a year and 2 months later?
Yeah, that's an excellent question to ask the EPA.
What do you think?
I think it's nonsensical. I think that there is no reason for them, especially now that 2014's over and done with, they should finalize the 2014 rules based on the actual production. I can't even imagine what else they would do. I mean, if they didn't set the biomass-based diesel at actual production levels that they actually produced at, I can't even imagine what else they would do.
Can you imagine
what they would do? I don't know. I mean, it would be just, it would almost be like a deliberate sabotage of the program for them not to set it at the actual production levels now that the year's gone.
Right. And going forward, if they were to lower it, what does that do to the industry? If they go forward with what they propose?
Well, they have said on multiple occasions that they're going to increase the volumes, which is really they've said that multiple occasions. Several EPA officials, including the administrator, Gina McCarthy, has said that. I can't imagine she would turn around on that now. It's really the only reason that our industry continued to persevere and ended up producing as much or more of the volumes than we were calling for them to set the volumes at the beginning of the year. We called for an RVO, excuse me, last year of 1.7 billion gallons in 2014. So in 2013, that's what we responded. That's what we asked for in the comment period for the proposed rule. We ended up doing almost 1.75 billion gallons, even in the absence of a finalized rule. And the only reason that happened is because the EPA insisted that they were going to get the final rule out quickly and that they were going to raise the numbers beyond the proposed volumes. While they haven't wavered on their insistence that they're going to, they're signaling that they're going to increase the numbers, they haven't wavered on that. It's just been a series of delays.
How optimistic are you on getting the RFS cleared up this year and also the tax credit, which I understand has lapsed?
Yes, the tax credit lapsed December 31st. about a week after it was reinstated. And I'm optimistic. You have to be optimistic to be in this industry. There's always been tremendous challenges, and we've always faced them every single time. And so we're gonna face this one down, and I'm optimistic that we'll have a positive outcome.
Even with the House and the Senate now being led by the Republicans, do you see them moving forward on the tax credit for renewable fuel?
Yes, I mean, tax. So the Republicans have self-proclaimed pro-business party,
right.
And they have said that, especially the Republican leadership on the Senate Finance Committee, they have said that it is absolutely ridiculous to do tax credit extenders and other things at the end of the year so that businesses can't do any planning to actually benefit the purpose of the tax credit. We want to help them achieve that that goal and support them in getting that done and frankly hold them to it.
Yeah, it's just I feel like there's certainly the wind industry concern that their tax credit's not going to be picked back up, and I wonder if you would be worried you're going to get caught up in that, and where do you see biofuel, like, sort of politically speaking right now? Is this a Democrat or a Republican issue at this point? How are the politics on this lining up?
Well, you have to remember that the two cornerstone policies that we have, the RFS and the tax credit, are Bush era policies.
Right.
They were bipartisan legislation that were promoted, advocated, signed by President Bush, and there are some members that have forgotten that, and we're doing our best to remind them of that. And my speech today was really, if you noticed, was a message to the Republican majority in Congress, the RFS, and it was to those who have been misquoting Adam Smith, and those who have said, we need to just do away with subsidies and mandates in the energy market, and just have a free market. And so the energy market is far from free.
Uh-huh.
The petroleum industry has significant subsidies and that don't expire, that are written into the tax code. So my speech today was somewhat targeted to the Republican majority to remind them that Adam Smith would be in favor of the RFS because it is pro-competitive, pro-consumer, pro-capitalist policy. Competition makes up the foundation of capitalism, and without a policy which mitigates the uncompetitive actions of a virtual product monopoly and an international cartel that manipulates supplies and prices on this international commodity, you can't have free markets. And so the only way to do that is to have a policy that helps to diversify the transportation fuel sector.
Yeah, I didn't want to take up all the questions, but I just have to ask off of that. So this change, the fact that this was a Bush-era policy and now you have Republicans sort of against it, what is that a product of the oil industry's opposition, API specifically? Is that what's changed?
That is certainly a big part of it. The petroleum industry spent in this last election cycle, spent by some estimates somewhere on the order of $300 million on this last election cycle. And that's hard to match. impossible to match, in fact.
But Bush was seen as a, you know, a friend of the oil industry. How did this ever, you know, how did it get through in the first place? That was like, you know, has something changed with the petroleum industry? Or?
Well, they've certainly gotten more aggressive. They have identified the RFS as a top priority, and repealing the RFS as a top priority. And again, parts of my speech were aimed at the petroleum industry to say, look, guys, your primary problem with the RFS is, in the most controversial aspects of the RFS that you've stated, is the corn ethanol section. And corn ethanol is capped out at 15 billion gallons in 2015. Well, we're here at 2015. So let's come together, let's collaborate, let's figure out how to responsibly and sustainably grow the overall advanced biofuel pool.
I was going to ask you, because that was one of the things you said, was you wanted to make one more appeal to the petroleum industry to work together, to collaborate. How do you see that being possible? What are ways that you might envision that happening in this year?
Sure, and to clarify, it's not all of the petroleum industry, because the petroleum industry certainly is not monolithic, and there are lots of segments of the petroleum industry that are supportive of biodiesel, that are supportive of the RFS, that support the goal of diversification. It's really primarily refiners and extractors that are sort of driving that opposition, and so, you know, we want to reach out to our partners who are supportive, collaborate with them, have them work with us in going to the other segments of the petroleum industry to say, look, this is very unconstructive what's going on here, and it's the law of the land. Let's make it work for the respective good of our industries, and let's make it work for the good of the country.
I think back to the politics part, just to add to what you said.
This is Ben Evans. Ben is our director of federal communications for DCF.
So. It's not so much partisan as it is regional. I mean, it's like a lot of energy politics, it's regional, and we're fortunate to have a presence in almost every state in the country. So we have, you know, rock-solid support in the Midwest, for example, Republicans and Democrats. We have great support in California and Washington State, for example. We've got good support on the East Coast. So it's, you know, I don't think it's a given that this is a Republican-Democrat issue. We have very strong Republican support. I mean, that's one of the things that we've worked really hard.
Chuck Grassley.
But also, you know, elsewhere, to make sure that the support we have in Congress reflects the presence that we have in the country, and, you know, where we have production facilities and things like that.
But where have you lost? So if you had, you know, the RFS to go through, there had to be support for renewable fuels at a majority. Where has that support now been lost if the tax credits expired? Or
The biggest challenge that we had was in the last, certainly the last 6 years, you know, we enjoyed strong bipartisan support in both houses of Congress and the White House, and when you had the Tea Party movement come in, you know, there was a real extreme polarization, both sides, both parties very polarized, like you hadn't seen in a long time. I mean, parties will be parties, and they'll fight and they'll fuss, but this was different, and there was a big sweep with that Tea Party movement that came in, and there were a lot of new people who really were new to Washington, were new to Congress, and there seemed to almost be a phenomenon where, you know, a lot of people were looking around to see what the other side of the aisle was for, so they would know what to be against. And that sounds simplistic, but it's in some cases that's as simple as it was.
And also context. I mean, you remember when it was passed. I mean, we were getting into two wars in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. The national security angle, I think, was perspective was much more, people were much more concerned about that and you know, the implications of oil on our foreign policy and things like that. And you know, people have short memories.
And now the United States has its own oil supply. Right. Is your point, right, with fracking, that that's become less...
Increased domestic
the production. Idea of creating a domestic fuel supply.
Well, you know, I mentioned that, you know, that the petroleum industry spent more than just about anybody else. They're at or near the top of the list of industries, you know, political spending. And one of their top priorities is to resist carbon policy. Mm-hmm. And the RFS is really the first real carbon policy. It one of its aims, I mean, energy independence, obviously, jobs, rural economy, you know, diversifying the fuel supply. But carbon policy was at the top of the list of goals for the RFS.
Right.
And it's really the only carbon policy at the federal government level that's actually done anything and has demonstrated some success. So that's one of the other reasons why the petroleum portions of the petroleum industry. I want to make sure that that comes out very clear, that there's just that the opponents of the RFS, some of them have identified the RFS as a target because it is a successful carbon policy.
Yeah, but it is the industry's, you know, main, the API, I mean, that represents the bulk, a large bulk of the industry. They are against, you know, they're your opposition, right?
Right, and as I mentioned in the speech, if you go on the website right now and you go to the banner, the top of the banner, it says top priority issues, and you click on that, the very first thing you come to is the RFS and the bullet points that that the RFS will increase diesel fuel prices by 300%.
Yeah.
It will, you know, lower GDP.
Has the API always been against the RFS, or did that switch?
Well, they were, it's my understanding that they were in general supportive of the Energy Act of 2005, which started RFS-1. But one of the reasons that they were supportive of that was because it included provisions that supported fracking. Mm-hmm. And also included provisions that prevented the EPA from regulating fracking.
Okay.
Have you been given any indication from either EPA or Congress about when they're planning on getting after these two policies for you, whether it's the tax credit or the RFS?
I'm sorry, can you ask the question again?
So have you been given any indication on the RFS and the tax credit as to when those are going to get taken up either by Congress or by EPA?
Well, the EPA got kind of stung last year by saying we're going to get it out in spring, and then spring came, and
right,
we're going to get
it
out in summer,
again.
Before the election, after the elections, and so I think they've thrown up their hands and said they're out of the prediction business.
Okay.
And so what they've said is they're going to get it out sometime in 2015. And just the absurdity of passing a requirement for 2014 in 2015 is pretty breathtaking. When it's so easy to, I mean, it is such a straightforward, easy thing to just set those volumes. It really, they have made it so complicated. They've way overcomplicated it. And sort of my point in the speech today was, let's look at the record. Let's see what the opponents have said, and let's see what we have said. And every single time, we were right. And not only were we right, we were over-conservative in terms of what we could achieve, what we could do, and why, rather than just making misleading claims. And almost every time, the opponents have made misleading claims, and certainly every time they've been wrong.
And what about the tax credit? Any indications on when that might come up on the Hill?
Well, it's... it's difficult. They say the new Republican majority, of course, it's only new majority in the Senate. They say that they want to go back to regular business, which means we have had a period of 6 years now where, and so regular business means they take up a bill in the House, they take up a bill in the Senate, they form a conference committee to reconcile the differences, send them back and vote on them. That hasn't happened. I mean, in just very few cases that has not happened in the last 6 to 8 years because of the hyper-polarized politics. And the new Republican majority in the Senate says, we want to do that. We want to go back to regular business. We want to make legislation, and we want to have conference committees and do the people's work. So it's very important that we hold them to that. Get in and do some work. They've also said they want to do tax reform. And tax reform is really hard because it's always controversial. And but you know, we need to hold the new majority in Congress to their word that A, it's absurd to let tax legislation linger all year round where it becomes you know, almost irrelevant, and people can't plan, and B, that they're going to do the work of the people.
And just for context, I mean, the tax incentive usually passes. There's like 30, 40, 50 tax incentives that expire. You know, R&D tax credit. There's all sorts of tax credits out there that are temporary that expire, and Congress always passes them in one bunch. And so it always just sort of depends on when they can.
So it's not like it's not like the other ones have passed.
Right.
None of them have passed.
Right.
And some of these include sort of. Like
there's all sorts of just general tax provisions that
for
are
schools.
That are,
and
there's a huge
non-controversial
Chamber of
stuff
Commerce
like wind
stuff
power
that or U.S. Chamber of Commerce is like top priority. You know, okay. We have to pass these tax incentives.
Okay.
Pass this package of they call them tax.
So you're not.
Tax
has this happened before? Where you go, it lapses, and then you got a fourth time in 6 years. Okay. So it would be more news if it hadn't.
This year was the first year that they did not extend it a year forward and a year back.
Yeah. So usually what they do is it expires.
Yeah.
And then once they get around to doing stuff at the end of the year, they'll reinstate it. And they'll reinstate it retroactively back to the beginning of the year.
Right.
And then forward 1 year.
Yeah.
So it's essentially a 2 year extension, even though it's retroactive for half of it.
Right.
And for clarification, the vote in December of 2014 on tax extenders, that was the fourth vote in 6 years, or 2015 is the fourth time?
15 is the fourth time in 6 years that it has expired.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Numbers in there.
Yeah.
I'm not as immersed in this subject as the rest of you are. You know, diesel prices, the federal government predicted will be a good dollar less in the coming year, regular diesel prices. In the coming year than they were the previous year. And I've talked to some analysts who said that they think it'll stay that low going into 2016. This is, you know, comes from this doom and gloom that everyone's predicting about the economy because of the falling price of a barrel of oil. What's your reaction to that? I mean, and what you're doing, you think it's going to impact what you're doing and how that would affect anything Congress would do? Because my guess is that Congress is not going to, I mean, the lack of a policy is what the petroleum industry likes. They don't, I mean, we haven't had one. The closest we got was Dick Cheney's secret meetings in the White House when he was vice president / president. So what's your reaction to the falling gas price, falling oil prices, falling diesel prices, fear and loathing? What do you think that's going to do, what your guys are up to?
So my prediction is that you'll hear the opponents of the RFS use that as a reason that why we don't need the RFS anymore. And our response to that is it is a reason that you need the RFS even more. You don't need the RFS nearly as much when you've got $111 a barrel crude oil, but when it falls by half in 6 months, based on, in part, manipulations by the cartel, you know, that's when you need to be most vigilant, because the reason they are helping the price tank is because they want to freeze out competitors and alternatives. And so the increase in supply that we have on the global market right now is in part because of, you know, new technology and new finds that are primarily non-conventional oils that are more expensive to produce, you know, way more expensive to produce than the Saudi oil. And so if they can freeze out those projects, and you've already seen lots of projects, lots of energy companies already laying off people, some going bankrupt, that kind of thing. So this is when you need policies like the RFS the most to mitigate those anti-competitive practices and to mitigate the massive instability in the international price of oil.
Can you just make a comment on the fact that we're now starting this 2015 conference? How's it look as far as the group we've got here, the program that you put together, in kind of in light of how the evolution of this becoming so much more focused of a business conference and what we've got going on this year?
Yeah, I think we have good turnout. It's a solid turnout. It's the serious business people that are here. The tire kickers from the old days and the prospectors and the, the gold rush of the 2006-2007 era has settled out, and you've just got the serious people here, and it's still a really good number. The mood of the conference is angry but energized, angry at the failure of Washington to just do its basic functions, but energized in being determined to make that change and to, to hold them accountable. So one other note, just back to why, when prices drop by half in half a year, why that energy policy to diversify the energy portfolio and that policy needs to be protected the most is because people don't think about energy, and so they just think about what gasoline prices are doing now, and oh, isn't this great? And they don't think about international markets or anything else. That's why they've been duped into thinking that the North American fracking projects are the reason why we have $1.87 gasoline. They don't think about the fact that you got $1.87 gasoline in Canada, and they've been, other than the difference in federal and provincial taxes, you have the same price for gasoline in Canada, and they have been 100% energy independent for quite some time now. So it's not how much oil you produce domestically, it's how much supply there is internationally. And so the primary way to offset that instability and volatility is to diversify more of our fuel supply, much like the power generation supply is now. It's highly diverse and all domestic. You've got nuclear and coal, wind, solar, biomass, hydroelectric, highly diversified, and therefore you've got relatively stable and affordable electricity prices. You don't have hardly any diversity, very little diversity other than biofuels in the transportation sector. And so just imagine if if all of our 401ks were like that, we just had one stock in the 401k, and even if that stock was the bluest of blue chip stocks, let's say, for example, General Motors, if you had the bluest of blue chip stocks in 2008, General Motors, but you just had that one stock in your 401k, that 401k would be vaporized.
On the lower cost of fuel right now, there's been a fair amount of talk about now it's time to add some new taxes to fuel for different reasons that I'm hearing. How serious do you think some of that is, and what kind of impact would that have on the industry if we actually did see that come to pass?
Well, it certainly has not been hasn't been named as a high priority by this particular Congress, but it would be an excellent time to take a look at that, because the federal excise fuel excise tax, I believe it's 19.4 cents per gallon on gasoline and 24.4 cents per gallon on diesel fuel, has not changed in more than two decades. It's been flat. And so back in 1993, when they bumped it up a little bit, you know, what were fuel prices back in 1993? They were lower than even they are yet today. And so, you know, build in inflation, and the Highway Trust Fund has not been self-sufficient in many, many years. So, you know, a sensible carbon policy could be a very fair policy, and could be one that could help sustain the Highway Trust Fund, and Lord knows we need infrastructure. And so we'll see. I mean, this Congress is still getting its feet wet.
I guess back to the price of oil. I did a story a couple of weeks ago where most of the, like ExxonMobil owns XTO here in Fort Worth. And they said that they test the price of their oil at $40 to $120 a barrel. And so as a result, you know, they're a big enough outfit, they don't even hedge, you know. And so far they haven't laid off anybody that we know of. At least there hasn't been any announcement of that. But they took steps, as did some of the other big companies here who saw this coming back in the summer. I mean, how much of this panic is contrived?
The panic of the drop in the oil price?
Yeah, I mean, some of the companies I've talked to, they started restructuring their debt and seeing that there's no way you're going to hold it $107 or $110 a barrel. The only person I've read of late who believes such a thing is possible is Boone Pickens. I mean, he's the only one who says, oh, in 6 months it'll be $100 or more a barrel. I haven't run into anybody who thinks that. Not a soul.
There was an article, I forget what publication it was in, it just came out this morning about the I believe he was an ex-president or vice president of Shell who was predicting, you know, he kind of got famous by predicting $5 gasoline in the early 2000s, and it got up to $4.25 it kind of peaked out and then crashed with the recession in 2008, but he's predicting high prices again, you know, by possibly as early as the end of this year. I don't know. I'm not predicting either way. I just know if you look at the price of oil over time, the one thing that you can predict is high instability.
And that it keeps going up. I mean, right. It may have some downturns, but the general trend.